It's Thursday, October 30th, 2014, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 86. Why is the second game always the worst? Runtime for this episode is 50 minutes. Hello, and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast with no treble. My name is Jeremy.
I beg to disagree.
I'm Tyler.
All your base are belong to us. My name is Zach.
Oh, man, that was clearly the better joke.
It was good. It was good.
Thank you.
Zach was quick-witted. He had a good joke. It must be an apocalypse miracle.
Yeah, it does look like it's raining blood out there.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to make an apocalypse X-Men joke, and it didn't work. So moving on.
Why is Slayer playing in Arvada?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Why aren't they?
Move along, Mr. Pale Rider. Nothing to see.
Mostly because this place is primarily populated by disabled people and you. I was going to say octogenarians, but yes, also me. I'm an outlier. I think I'm the youngest person in this neighborhood by about 20 years.
I feel like I see people watching anime when I, like, go home from your house most nights, though.
How many creepy 40-year-olds do you know that watch anime? Remember that one time you guys went to, like, go watch a Dragon Ball Z movie and, like, this 40-year-old guy argued about the merits of Vegeta? No, I remember you telling me about this in high school, so.
I'm trying to think of when this would happen.
Maybe it was actually a Pokemon movie and he was talking about Vegeta.
Like, that sounds more reasonable, but I can't remember. I mean, I've been thinking about the Dragon Ball movie a lot lately for reasons I'll get to later.
Anyway.
But the Dragon Ball movie, like, when you said Dragon Ball movie, I thought you meant Dragon Ball Evolution, which didn't come out until I was in college.
No, it was like an animated movie of some sort, and there was some guy who was, like, wearing a Vegeta, like, polo shirt.
This is not a story I remember happening to me, so.
Well then, fine. Maybe I'm just making things up.
Maybe you are.
Probably.
It's possible. Humans have notoriously faulty memories. Especially, I was talking about something recently, and Alex was like, well, I can verify that with a fairly accurate, if somewhat lossy, data bank I have stored between my ears. I'm like, not accurate enough.
In fact, but terrible at recalling detail.
We've actually found that the more confident you are in your memory, the more easily suggestible your memory is. So if you're really confident in how well you remember things, it's easy to convince you that you remember things differently than how they happen.
See, it's really hard to convince me that I remember things differently than how they actually happened, because I don't freaking think I remember a lick of anything. I had to double check a game I played yesterday.
Turns out that's actually indicative that you have a better memory than you think you do.
Of course, I'm awesome.
Although, they found another study recently, or in another series of studies. These are a couple interrelated studies about which I've read and have done my own meta-analysis, but they found that people who are more confident in their abilities are more likely to be overrated by their peers in addition to by themselves, and people who are actually very good at what they do underestimate themselves based on the overconfident people's estimations of their own abilities.
So what you're telling us is you're overrated by your peers.
No, I'm underrated.
It's not what I'm hearing.
I have made no claims about my abilities except when I have. Unfortunately, we all have lossy data banks stored between our ears, so how would we ever verify? Except for the recorded data.
As you want to say, we just need like a Big Brother state to record everything for us, and then we just have to tell the government to post our chat logs.
Speaking of which, you guys ever heard of Pidgin?
Yes.
Heard of it, because you keep talking about it.
Okay, fair enough. It's a polyglot IM engine.
See, I prefer Trillion.
Yeah, it's a very similar function to Trillion. Pidgin, however, is open source.
So, yes, you know, you can add in new messengers, even if they're like super niche.
Yep. We actually have one for Steam, which is nice. So.
Oh, cool.
That Ed doesn't have to exit out of his Steam client to talk to me while I'm at work. Because that happens surprisingly frequently. Anyway, the point where I was getting to this is they have a plugin called Off the Record, which automatically, so you and your partner each enter a code that is automatically generated by Off the Record for you, and all communications between those two machines are encrypted after you press a button.
So they should call it Nixon mode.
Yes, except didn't Nixon like...
Yeah, he needed that.
Yeah, okay, yes. Nixon would have needed that. That would have made Watergate not a gate. And then we wouldn't have stupid things like Gamergate or like Polygate or all these other things.
Something with gate.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Gamergate since we're a gaming podcast, or should we ignore it? See, I figured Zach would not know it was
I don't even know what it is, and it's all over Reddit. What the hell is Gamergate?
Do you know who Anisia Sarkadian is? I might be mispronouncing her name.
No.
She is a game developer, best known for her YouTube series,
yes.
Women vs. Tropes in Gaming.
I've heard about this.
She gets a lot of rape threats because she has the audacity to go into a male-dominated hobby and dissect video games.
Wait, really?
Critically. She gets a ton of rape threats. She's on the internet and says opinions that are unpopular with men.
Really?
That's
really. I like
stupid.
To think that
this
we're...
is step one. This is part one of Gamergate. This is not the start. This is the prologue to Gamergate.
No,
so we're already been a bad place.
I was going to say, I really feel like we should be a classier community than that. Maybe it's just
we
I...
should be.
Yes.
Unfortunately, a lot of us aren't.
Yes.
Maybe it's just the people we hang out with.
Furthermore, she has the opinion that gamer is a dumb, not stereotype, but class of people. Because people who go to movies aren't moviers, and games are getting popular enough that it should just be a thing in the media. People shouldn't identify with them. Also, an unpopular opinion among people who are really into video games.
I think there's a certain lifestyle that merits a classification. I think there are a lot of people who go to movies often enough that we should probably have a term for that. We actually, Daniel Fink, he's a professor of philosophy at, I think, Ohio University, actually has an interesting article on the rise of new nomenclature and why it's useful.
Well, but, gamer, the term, evokes an image of people like me in mom's basement with all of our stuff around us.
And also people who are on the internet issuing rape threats.
Yeah. As opposed to like you who is successful with a house, a wife, and a freaking big old TV that I really want to steal.
And three cats.
It was only $300 at Walmart.
Yeah, make me regret my $300 purchase at Best Buy for the... Though, to be fair, I don't know where I put your massive TV.
So anyway, she's unpopular. At the same time, we have this thing going on in games right now, similar to what was going on with movies in the 90s, where game critics are kind of tired of AAA shooter games and tend to give them bad ratings, even though they sell very well and are popular with gamers.
They're technically good games, but they're not terribly interesting in terms of innovation.
They also tend to give very favorable reviews to games like The Walking Dead and Gone Home, and these games that have... in some cases, very poor mechanics, but create an emotional state that's very interesting, especially when you consider how novel it is.
Okay.
Similar to movies in the 90s where there were these action blockbusters, which even critics today will say, no, those were great. But critics were so tired of them, they only went for the art house stuff. So we have a similar thing happening in video games right now. Arnia Sarkeesian makes games like this. She made one called Depression Quest, which people like a lot because depressed people have said it's a very good emulation of what it feels like to be depressed. That said, being depressed doesn't make for good game mechanics, really. So you have people giving it very high reviews. You have then have gamers who trust these reviewers buying this game and not liking it and then being very upset. So that's the prologue to Gamergate.
Yeah, I think I heard about this through Reddit finally, although it wasn't called this when it was happening.
Fill me in, because I'm still lost.
So she releases another game. I can't even remember the game. Polygon reviews it, gives it a very favorable review. And so then people start buying it and they don't like it. Then her ex-boyfriend comes off, says she cheated on him, posts pictures of her naked, posts her address online, and it's come out that she was cheating on him with a guy at Polygon. It was not the guy who reviewed her game. Polygon knew about the relationship and did not allow him to, and he also didn't ask because professional integrity. But suddenly this blows up, and suddenly all these guys who are giving her rape threats knows where she lives.
And
a guy showed
terrifying.
Up at her house with a gun.
What?
She was not there. She went to stay with friends.
Why would you do that?
So
that please tell me that guy got arrested.
She's a relatively obscure video game developer. Who gives a
I do not believe he did because he had a license to carry the gun and did not use it.
No, not him. Not him. The guy who posted her address.
Oh, well, that's not a crime.
It's not technically.
That's bull.
Yeah, it is. So we have this huge explosion of a situation. There are these guys who say she's wrong, that this is a scandal, that there's no integrity in journalism, which is sort of true when you also add on the fact that people are paying for good reviews all the time, which is sort of a separate issue that's muddling things, but is true. And you have this crazy situation, which is unfortunately not unique. It's just extreme.
Highly publicized.
So anyway, that's Gamergate, and that's why people are all in a tizzy, because this is a terrible situation that all makes us look very bad.
Posting naked pictures of one's ex is an unfortunately common practice.
Yes.
But
this is, you know, in a very public place. No, oh, here's her address. You went to kill her? Here you
right.
go.
So, from the perspective of Reddit, though, there were a bunch of comments talking about this and, like, just asking questions about the effect. And various posts on Reddit were, entire threads were deleted by people who work for various game review companies. Just outright deleted with no explanation.
Well, yeah, and that's where more of that journalistic integrity that is a, not exactly a side issue, because it's a big part of it, but it is, to me, the less important issue.
Well, part of it, though, is people are saying, here's what we know happened, and people were just deleting things that were just outright facts.
Well, that's why I don't like Reddit, is because, you know, it's Reddit's house. They get to make the rules. They get to say, you're allowed to come here and you're not, but I'm going to go where my friends are allowed to be, so to speak. And I don't want the big social congregation spot to be a place that has any rules. Even though I think rules make communities better.
I definitely support that. My problem with it is that most of the moderators of gaming forums are also the high editors in most gaming magazines.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's part of this Gamergate problem is there's this congregation of corrupt power in the gaming magazines.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of what came out of this. That's at least what I pulled away from this, is not so much, hey, that really sucks for that one game developer who made a kind of shoddy game and people want to rape her for some reason. I don't understand that. But more that we have corrupt journalism, which is kind of a problem because free press is kind of the voice of the people.
It's supposed to be.
Yeah, so the problem is it's the voice of the people with the most money.
Well, we have a voice out there. We have to attract people to it, but...
That is true. I think the number of people who represent independent thoughts on the matter represent a greatly diminished portion of the number of people who actually listen to things.
Well, plus, us talking about this is already out of date, and this will come out too... this is going to come out even more out of date, although people are still talking about it. It won't go away. Because it's a big issue.
That's actually, this has been a big thing.
I wish it wasn't an issue. I wish this kind of thing didn't happen with gamers.
Yeah,
I think it wouldn't, since we're the ones that are always, we're ostracized going into that. But
yeah, but some people lack perspective.
Plus, there's lots of psychological studies that show people that feel ostracized try to ostracize other people.
Yeah. Or a new meme has been introduced on Reddit recently for people who don't know about information and don't know how to ask the correct question, so they ask it to Reddit. Which is similar to explain it like I'm 5.
I was going to say, what's the difference between that and explain it like I'm 5?
Nothing except this one's on advice animals, and people think this might be the death of the explain it like I'm 5
subreddit. I was
going to
say, I wonder what a Gamergate explain it like I'm 5 would be.
That was one of the questions today. This actually started over someone asking that question with that new meme, and it suddenly popped up into like 1,000 people making things they want to ask questions about. But additionally, people ask about net neutrality. But
yeah.
I kind of read the explain it like I'm 5, and I did not see any really satisfactory answers.
Okay, well, that's my understanding of Gamergate. I'm not on Twitter and not in the games journalism market any more than this podcast.
Yeah, and I honestly don't really care about it.
I probably consume more video game podcasts than
any of us?
The other two of you, and they tend to be more editorial, so maybe I get...
Coincidentally, Ed's coming back in, like, I think... Yeah, wait,
wasn't he coming back last month?
Yeah. No, his furniture shipped Wednesday, so...
I eventually welcome our new German overlord.
You know, this reminds me of your delve into Monokemia. No, not Monokemia.
Grandia?
Okami, where you were almost done with Okami for like 3 months.
Speaking of Okami, I'm still not done with Grandia 2.
What have you been playing then?
Grandia 2. Actually, I only played a little bit of that, and then I really like this game for the character development, but the dungeons are so... Okay. Part of the problem is I'm playing it on an emulator, and it definitely experiences slowdown where there are too many sprites on screen. Like, it loads huge portions all at once. Something we learned later was that you could do incremental loading, like most of the Elder Scrolls games do this, where as you're walking, it'll load a portion of the screen in front of you. Minecraft does this too. This is before we learned that technique, so it wants these really big, vast areas to explore. But it loads them all at once, so there are too many sprites in the area, it slows down a lot, it's kind of a problem. So I got to the last dungeon, and I'm like, I'm walking so slowly. So, you know, hardware slowdown, unlike in Mega Man, actually adversely affected me here. Also, I already know how the game's going to end, because I'm pretty sure it's that predictable in the last, like, 20 minutes.
You kill God?
No, God's already dead, actually.
You kill the other guy and then become God. We went over this, right?
Yeah, we did go over this. I don't think you become God. I think you just kill all the gods and then walk away. So
you Kratos that.
Yeah. I didn't actually play that much of it because I got annoyed by the slowdown enough that I wanted to go do something else. So I played some Payday, and that was fun. Man, what did I do?
Play any more Walking Dead?
I didn't. It's very sad. Oh, actually, that's what I've been playing instead of The Walking Dead is Apollo Justice.
Attorney at Law.
Ace Attorney at Law, even though he's only won one case so far in the game I've been playing. Oh, I guess two. He's won two cases.
So this is Apollo Justice 2, or?
No, this is still the first one.
Oh, okay.
The first case, I had to go regrain my ground after accidentally corrupting my save file.
Okay.
And then got that far, finished that case, which ran unexpectedly long, but it was actually a pretty good one. And now I'm into my third one, so. Yay, Apollo Justice. It's fun. Other than that, I've been playing a lot of my free time is soaked up by Smash. I tend to do online for glory one-on-one matches, so... I have this problem, though, where if I beat someone really easily, I'll play, like, maybe one more match against them to make sure it wasn't a fluke. I'm like, this guy's not worth it anymore. So then I'll exit and go against someone else. And then if I beat or I get someone who can consistently beat me, I'll play like 10 matches against them because I'm like, man, I know I can beat this guy eventually. And it's kind of destroying my win-loss ratio.
Since they have this game for you called Castlevania, I think you'd really like it. It's a good game.
Yeah. So that said, it's been a lot of fun. I'm actually maintaining about a 70% win rate, which is not bad, but it would probably be better if I knew when to quit. So
anything else?
That's pretty much it this last week. I played a fair amount of the assignment. I actually spent like 2 entire nights playing it.
Oh, nice. Zach, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot of League of Legends because that's what I do. Playing a lot with my friends Kevin and Cody on voice comms. Unfortunately, we haven't gotten the full 5-man band back together to play. I had a game where me, Kevin, and Jason, where we were doing really well. I got killed midway down the lane, and Jason, who was playing with us and isn't as experienced, was kind of lingering. And I had an item that was going to bring me back, and I was going to probably die. There were two of them standing on my body. So we're telling Jason, you know, run away, you can't help me, you know, you're not going to save me or anything. So the item's called Guardian Angel. Procs. I get back up, kill one of the two guys that are there on top of my body, and then jump away.
Wow.
So it's like, no, you can't help me, only I can help me.
I'm surprised you lived.
I didn't stick around to fight. So I popped up, killed their jungler who was underfarmed, and then jumped away, which his jump has extremely long range when you upgrade it.
Okay, so this is something I'm curious. How does a jungler farm? Do they actually just go and kill only the things in the jungle?
There are jungle camps that they farm, and that's usually where a jungler is farming, is in his camps. If a laner is out of lane and he's nearby, a lot of junglers will come out of the jungle and farm that lane for a little while so that that gold doesn't go to waste.
So are there minion-level creatures in the jungle anywhere? Because I don't remember seeing any.
There are several camps. The Wraith camp and the Wolf camp are both fairly low level, but they aren't ever really like given levels. They're just the two weakest camps in the jungle.
They tend to be a little stronger than minions, but mostly that's a problem because you don't have your own minions to hide behind.
Okay.
And you definitely take masteries that make you tankier. There are some explicitly that reflect damage onto jungle monsters that you take if you're jungling.
So what is the goal when jungling? Just get
to be the X factor. To suddenly be like, oh, hey, this is a 3v2. Surprise.
Okay.
Yeah, their strength is in the fact that no one knows where they are.
Because
you don't know when they're going to show up, so you have to be careful. Because you might push your opponent into their tower, and you're going all hunky-dory and kicking their butt, and it's like, yeah, I'm going to win. And then their jungler shows up, and he's perfectly fine.
And he can come out from behind you because you're overextended. In addition, it allows the gold to be more focused on a player who gets to farm a lane all by themselves. Experience is shared if you're close enough, so that prevents that, and you have a higher-level player. And you're using these resources in the jungle instead of just letting them sit.
And then the last thing that a jungler is usually supposed to do is keep an eye on neutral objectives like the dragon and the baron and then the two buffs
because
in his camp, in his jungle.
Because killing the dragon or the baron gives you your team.
It currently gives global gold.
Okay.
They may be changing that for season 5, but we're going
subsequent question, and I think that given all the other information, the answer is no, but could a team feasibly win without a jungler?
It is possible because you can put a lot of pressure on wherever your second duo lane is. The problem is that your opponent's jungler now has basically 2 jungles to farm, and he can still show up and be the X factor. We have won games in which it was a 2v1 in the top lane against me, specifically because I was able to stay safe, farm as best I could in top lane, and then just tie down those other 2 people while the jungler, mid laner, and you know everybody else was getting standard experience. So it's possible, but just the way the jungler works and able to make use of that other income stream, plus the effect he has on the map and everything else that goes with it, it's more effective to have a jungler than it is to not have one.
It sounds like neglecting that income stream is just a terrible idea anyway, so.
Yeah, low-level players usually won't have a jungler because they don't have access to those masteries, and jungling is kind of tricky. And they make major changes to the game every year after the World Championship. And after those changes, there's almost always a pro team that tries no jungler to see how it works. And they almost always go back to jungling.
Okay.
Primarily just that X factor of, oh, you thought this was a 1v1? Nope, it's a 1v2.
Yeah, it sounds like having that as a potential trump card.
That is the biggest strength of a jungler, especially in high-level play. And lower-level play, it's more about the income streams, which is also important.
Yeah.
Okay. I think my curiosities have been satisfied. I'm really interested in the metagame of that game. But
it seems like you might enjoy it as an esport, but you don't like sports.
Yeah, and that's kind of my problem. I like it as an abstract logic puzzle.
You should play it with us a couple more times.
I should, yeah.
Or at least, like we said, update the client.
Yeah, details.
Speaking of esports, semifinals were this week. I watched the first one and was so bored by it, I haven't watched the second one
yet. That was
blue Samsung White versus Samsung Blue. Where Samsung Blue was like, let's go on vacation match right now. What do you mean?
I'm still saying.
I think White's going to win the whole shebang.
So who won the semifinals?
White. Okay. Yeah, Blue did worse than Jackie Chan in the second act of any fight. It was not good.
And they're the team that always beat White 3-1 in best of fives.
Even the
White
Jackie Chan Adventures Jackie Chan?
Yeah, he wasn't nearly as bumbling as Jackie Chan in live action, was he? But he also had magic talismans to add to the comedy and a comic relief niece, so he didn't need to rely on himself. It's weird that I can't answer that, because Jackie Chan Adventures Jackie is my Jackie Chan. But like now I'm trying to imagine like him doing Jackie Chan things, and it's not working.
I can't either. I remember Uncle doing stuff. Yeah,
Uncle
way
was
more.
The best. Uncle and Toru. And Jade was okay.
One of our guys in our...
Yeah, in our anime KMP, we have an uncle.
Has who Uncle. Is the, that's how everybody views him, is Uncle from Jackie Chan Adventures.
He had a training montage where he trained Zack and Cody's characters.
That's awesome. Did he have a pufferfish?
No.
Oh.
He's a little more serious than Uncle from Jackie Chan.
Fair enough.
But...
But other than League, there was one day in which me and Kevin were playing together, and we did really, really poorly. Like, we lost every game we played. We had a DC in every game we played, except for the one game in which we had a blisteringly awful set of teammates.
DC?
Disconnect. Didn't, or never connected. AFK, you know.
Gotcha.
And so...
Stuck in Washington, D.C., voting.
Yeah. And at one point, we both looked at it and said, I'm done. I'm done for the night. I'm not going to play anymore because this is just pissing me off. And so I went and I booted up Assassin's Creed 4.
Oh. Yeah, where did you get in that game before?
I was still in
it?
Havana the first time, which is where you first go.
Okay.
But now I've been playing it a lot more. I'm still in Havana, but that's because I've been doing a lot of like the side quests and assassinations
and stuff.
The side
quests are like the most fun. Like the assassination quests are good. The hunting is okay. It gives you good returns.
I haven't done any hunting yet. I've just been doing the assassination contracts. And I've only been playing it for like an hour before bed and whatnot.
And later you get naval contracts, and those are a lot of fun, but they're a little more of an investment.
And I just like roaming around using the Assassin's Creed thing. And I'm having a lot more fun this time not using my keyboard.
Yeah, I recommended get a controller, and you're like, nah, I've got a keyboard.
And since I have the controller for Rogue Legacy, I've been just using my 360 controller that's plugged into my tower.
Computer.
Because it feels just so much more natural to use the controller.
Like that's what they designed it for or something.
Yeah, it's almost
basically
weird.
Everything but shooters I use a 360 controller for. It's a really
RTSs,
good controller.
RTSs
would be
don't support 360 controllers.
You don't play a lot of RTSs either.
No.
I feel like for...
I would have expected you to use the keyboard for fighting games when you could.
That is true. Actually, I do.
So I played a little bit more of Dead or Alive 5, but that's usually just one thing that I play every so often because it takes no time to do a fight, and it's a good way to zen, just chill out, or whenever I do training, it's like, okay, I'm just going to do training and that's it. And
that's pretty much what I've been doing with Smash, is I either do like 3 or 4 online matches or like 1 5-minute Smash run, and I play for like 5 minutes.
Been thinking about getting into ranked, played a couple of ranked games, didn't do very well. But kind of want to see if I can climb before the end of the season, but I highly doubt it. I think the only person I know that has a chance of actually making it to gold is Jeremy if he wants to play.
Yeah, well, my one game of League of Legends is ranked this week, and I lost hard. Actually, I played 2 games. I lied, because I won really, really easily in a normal. I was like, I should play a ranked and ride this high. And that didn't work out. So I'm at 0 LP currently.
What else have you been playing there, Jeremy?
Like nothing? I'm trying to think of that now.
I haven't
booted up my
segue.
Wii.
Huh. Based on Zach playing Pirate Assassins. Ed found that there's an Uncharted Waters MMO.
Yeah, you've sent it to me. Also, this is the second one.
Yes.
There was one before this. I didn't know there was a new one.
Yeah, it's Risen Dark Waters, right?
I didn't actually look at the subtitle, but
I know this is a different one. This is
Ed suggested that we start playing and form a guild.
Oh, so. I'm up for that if we have a foursome. Because I've actually, I should talk about this. Kind of a running joke, not even a running joke, a joke I told at my gaming table. Star Wars The Old Republic. Announced they had an announcement. That announcement was, we're not announcing our expansion today.
I remember that.
They then announced, we're going to announce our expansion tomorrow. And then announced their expansion later.
Why have a press conference to announce your
this
announcement?
This is a Gamergate. See, it all ties together. They're releasing an expansion. If you pre-order the expansion and you pay monthly, because Old Republic is free to play, but it also has a monthly subscription that like gets you everything.
Okay.
If you have a subscription and a pre-order, The story quests in the game give you 12 times normal experience.
Holy sh! Is that a little broken? Because that seems a little broken.
Well, that'll just jump you up really, really fast, not really.
In the beta to test the game, they had them giving out 3 times, because that's about what you needed to level up doing just story quests. At 12 times, you can level up just doing story quests and never fighting. I've been told it's super broken because you don't get any gear, and when you have to fight bosses for story quests, you have no gear. Yeah, you have to. It's super good for leveling up if you have a rich alt who can just like give you a lot of money to buy gear on the auction house. But that's interesting to me.
I forgot that MMO is still running, honestly.
Well, so did I, and I was like, man, that was fun. Oh wait, I remember. I don't play it because the payment model is bull. Pay to hide your hat? No, thank you.
Pay for a second action bar? No, thanks.
Really pay to hide your hat so you can wear a helmet for defense but not actually have it show up on the screen?
No, to not have it show up on the screen, you have to pay.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Also, they had this really cool... You know how in every MMO you look like a clown because you have this assortment of gear? Swoter had this cool thing where it would color match all your gear so it looked like an outfit. Have to pay for that.
You have to microtransaction for everything in that game.
You want more than one action bar? Gotta pay for that.
Say it. Want to be able to follow someone? Gotta pay for that.
Not quite that bad.
Yeah, I don't think it's that bad. But still, you have to pay for everything that like World of Warcraft gives you for free on their subscription.
You can also buy a subscription and that gives you everything. But it's more that the principle, it felt
that
filthy
is really
to me.
Sleazy to do
it. You know a commercially successful game that involved a lot of pay transactions? One of the earliest, actually, before like pay to play was like
Tibia
thing.
Tibia is one of the first ones.
I forgot about that.
Tibia and Kingdom of Loathing are contemporaries, and they just found out about each other last year. I found this really amusing.
Really? Did they?
Yeah, because they're both like that early model of, like, before pay to win was a thing, pay to win.
Well, Tibia wasn't necessarily pay to win, although the...
It gave
the
you so
spells,
many benefits.
Yeah, some of the better spells were on the
I was
island.
Thinking Maple Story, but all the transactions in that were entirely cosmetic, and they made a shit ton of money.
Well, that's how League of Legends is.
Exactly. Sort of like that. You can also pay for actual progress stuff, but they try to encourage you to earn it. I don't really think they do, but they allow you to earn it, so it feels a lot less sleazy.
Well, people are like, you have to grind for all this IP for champions, or you have to grind for all this IP for rune pages. I'm like, see, there's your problem.
Yep.
You're thinking of it as, I have to grind for this. For me, it's like, I'm playing the game and I'm being rewarded with IP for it.
Well, that's the genius of the system. You're either playing the game or giving them money. Either way, they win.
Or in a lot of people's cases, like me,
both. Yeah.
So technically playing the game doesn't do them anything.
I think the idea is then you're going to talk about it because everyone who plays League of Legends talks about it and you're likely to talk to someone who's going to pay them money.
It's free advertising.
Yeah. And, although actually the reason they went with that model is it's way easier to do in Asia, which is why MapleStory had that model.
And it was extremely successful.
Yeah.
I wonder if MapleStory 2 ever launched. I was like,
I think it's still under development, because I hear about it occasionally.
I was following it really closely, and then I just, like, stopped for no apparent reason. And I really liked MapleStory. I dumped probably 200-300 hours into that game, and then I stopped playing it for reasons.
I mean,
so
you can do not even pay to win, but microtransactions, right. And there are still games that do. DC Universe Online, I think, has a pretty fair microtransaction
model.
How
does theirs work?
There's a bunch of cosmetic stuff you can pay for. You also, if you pay $15 a month, you get all the expansions, or you can buy them individually for, I think, $10 each. It's either 10 or 15.
Or SimCity 5, $15 for buses.
No, they fixed the problem SimCity 5 had with, like, always-on connectivity crap. They didn't do anything to their microtransactions.
No, it's horrible.
The one problem with DCU, the one thing that is a little on the skeezy side, is they give you a money cap that you can only have a certain amount of money on your character. And if you go over that, it goes into escrow, which you can get access to by paying them. And the cap is fine for leveling up. It's great if you're a new player. It's absurdly high. But if you're at the level cap or even close to it, it's really small, and paying for repairs suddenly becomes a big deal. And you can also pay for inventory upgrades. And so you have this thing where you're like, I don't want to pay for money, so I'm hoarding all this inventory stuff, all this junk, so I can sell it when I pay for my repairs. And that is not great, but for the most part, it's pretty good. It does not make you pay for your action bars or...
No, it doesn't make you pay for everything else. Yeah, I think the best way to do microtransactions is just for purely cosmetic things. Although, you know, the main thing that SimCity 5 has in common with the other game that has really, really terrible, what's it called?
EA?
Yeah. They're both made by EA.
Yeah. What? Dungeon Keeper, the mobile version, a game by EA. In Europe, they're not allowed to call it a free game because there are too many microtransactions.
I remember hearing about that, actually.
That's so, EA, here's the definite. If it's a free game, that means we don't have to pay for anything in it.
They passed a law, the European Union, about a game has to have a certain amount of content to be called free, and I don't remember what the actual law is, but it did not qualify.
As a result of this, all games in the Google Play Store that require a certain number of microtransactions, or I guess a certain amount of level progress due to microtransactions, are not allowed to be labeled as free in the store.
So we're coming around to it. It is too bad for games like League of Legends, which have good models, but for the most part, they rise to the top, so it's fine.
Yeah, League, I think, has the best model.
I think that's...
You can't pay to win in League, actually.
I mean, there's a perfect storm of combinations that has to happen for a game to get really popular, but if it's a good game, that greatly increases your chances.
Indeed.
So,
well,
and League clearly is a good game because it's got, like,
you can't
100 million players or something.
One of the things that helps League is you can't pay to win.
Exactly.
To get runes, which are fairly necessary, you can only get those through IP.
You can elo boost. There are ways. But
that's not
pretty hard.
That's not in the game. That's external.
Yeah.
And if they find you doing it, you will be banned.
It is
against the terms of service.
Pay someone else to play for you
and get you. It's really common around the end of the season for the season rewards where they give out like a free skin and some other stuff.
Why would that be illegal?
It's against the terms of service to let somebody else use your account.
Why?
Competitive integrity, basically. They want to enforce it.
Okay.
Before
also,
pro salaries were so good, most pros, that's how they made most of their money.
Yeah, and on top of everything else, Riot said so.
Yeah.
So it's...
Well, I mean, they are completely within their rights to arbitrate that. That seems arbitrary.
Yes, but a lot of Riot's things are that, and they're not that shady, so compared to some other companies.
That's technically, it's illegal to have someone else play your World of Warcraft account for you.
Yeah.
So, or to farm for gold.
Yes.
So.
So anyway, speaking of farming, Metroid 2...
The game in which you farm Metroid's carcasses to harvest their delicious sugar.
No, there's no farming in Metroid. You're not the planet you're on does not look like it would support farming at all. At least Zebes had some volcanoes, probably had some pretty good soil.
I'm
Think about this for
like
a moment.
A harvest moon that has Samus running around.
Yeah.
Actually thinking, what is that called? It's the Harvest Moon fantasy games.
They made one of those. You played Rune Factory, right? Both
of
you. That was the DS one? They did a sci-fi one on the PSP. It's just that no one has a PSP.
Okay. I was going to say...
What's a PSP?
It's a thing.
Oh, okay.
It's like the Neo Geo and the Wonder Swan.
The
Wonder Swan?
It's a mobile gaming device. It's Japan only.
Oh.
There's a lot of anime tie-in games, specifically a bunch of Digimon games that were canon, were only on the Wonder Swan.
Like the N-Gage?
Yes, but it's been around longer and... actually was popular in Japan and had good video games and
all
was
got
not
left
a cell
these,
phone.
All we've got left are these N-Gages.
And
I wouldn't even throw these at zombies.
Yeah, because it was a cell phone, but you could play games on it. Revolutionary.
I was going to say...
ahead of its time, you might say.
Although I could play games on my cell phone back when it was a flip phone, so...
Yeah, the N-Gage came out in like 2003.
Okay, fair enough. I was going to say a Metroid-themed Rune Factory, I think, would be really interesting. I would be into that. But
like,
yeah,
what
you
would
and,
you
like,
farm?
One other person.
Like, so you're selling turnips so you can buy a better arm cannon?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's basically what you do in Rune Factory Frontier. Or
yeah, but you also give crops to girls so that you can have totes makeouts.
That is true. I forgot about that. And then you can have a tornado destroy your crop once a year. No one
Despite it
that.
Being underground and your tree.
Details.
It is still destroyed by a tornado.
Well, you can say it's a cave-in. And then you have to clear the field, which you have to do during a tornado anyway, so.
Yeah, and you, like, capture bees to harvist honey in Rune Factory.
Yeah. Well, not the one in the Game Boys.
Oh.
That's on the DS ones. The animals are useful but optional. They're like cows in Harvest Moon.
Yeah, well, cows in Harvest Moon are how you make all your money, though.
Yeah, you get chickens in order to buy cows, and then when you have cows, you're like, I'm rolling in bank.
It's mostly that in cow-like objects in Rune Factory are necessary to craft high-quality gear.
Ah.
Which you then use to smite evil.
Well, evil needs smiting. There's no way around that. Which is why Samus went to the planet with all the Metroids to smite all the evil Metroids.
So, did you actually read
first question, why exactly didn't they just nuke it from orbit like anybody with a brain would
have done? I believe because they're underground. That's why you're going deeper and deeper. and they couldn't just nuke underground.
Then they're just not trying hard enough.
So I do argue that they could have destroyed the planet, but on the other hand, that could have like upset the orbits of other planets that were habited or something.
Also, don't they Metroids feed on energy? Maybe they didn't want to risk the fact that the Metroids might eat the nuke. Also, then you don't have a video game. Press button to nuke. Boom. You is winner.
That probably would have been a lot more fun.
Unobtainium. So Metroid 2 is a game about Samus hunting Metroids in a cave. There's a lot of cave.
There are more Metroids than the Metroid.
That is true.
Do you fight any Metroids in Metroid? Is there one at the end? I can't remember now.
There are a couple.
No, there are a bunch because they're in. Yeah, now I'm remembering. You have to freeze them and then shoot them with missiles.
Yeah, they're in the Taurian area. Yeah. It's a very similar thing to the end part of Super Metroid, but.
Yeah, but Super Metroid has that giant Metroid, I think.
No.
Maybe
no
I'm missing Metroids. No, you're right. You're right.
There is your pet Metroid sucks Mother's brain's brain.
Yeah.
And.
Which this game ends with you getting your pet Metroid.
Oh, really?
And, yeah. It like hatches and imprints on you because there are no more Metroids for it to think it's its mother.
Oh, and so you're the only living thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I know where that Metroid came from. You know, playing Super Metroid as a kid, I'm always like, yeah, whatever. Other Metroids. Details. It gives you a super laser beam at the end, so I guess it's a cool Metroid.
It's in the title. It must be a good guy. Like the alien in Alien.
So, like the original Metroid, you're exploring areas.
The controls are basically exactly the same. You start with the Morph Ball. You hit down to Morph Ball. You hit fire to shoot. You hit A to jump. You hit select to switch to missiles, which do more damage.
You start out with, I think, 30
of
them, which
seems like a lot. It doesn't tell you that you can hit select to change to missiles right off the bat.
Nah. It also doesn't tell you that you can hit A to fire.
That is true. Did you guys ever, or did you guys read the actual, like, story for this game?
Because no.
Oh, God.
I don't think I did for this one. Usually I do.
It's basically like, oh no, the space pirates had Metroids, and there's some left on that planet that you went to earlier. You should go kill all of them. I think one person is the best option for that.
Have you seen video game NPCs?
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, did you play Other M? Because that's all about a guy telling you to go get your butt kicked to do things for him.
Arguably, so is Fusion, but Fusion's still fun, so. I never played Other M.
Neither did I. Anyway, this is basically a Metroid game. You go around, you explore. It doesn't have a map, and I think it's actually the lack of color makes it really hard to distinguish between rooms compared to the first Metroid, so it was really easy for me to feel lost.
That's another problem I had with this, is that unlike basically every other Metroid game, there isn't a huge biomic change when you go to a new biome. There's kind of like a ruin area.
Is there even a music change? Because that's usually accompanying...
There is a music change between different areas, but... Oh, God, the music in this game is so lackluster.
Well, it's on the original Game Boy. They didn't have a whole lot of bits to play with.
Have you listened to Rock O.W.?
Yeah.
No.
I was going to say, it is on the Game Boy, and they didn't have a lot to work with. But Link's Awakening, Pokemon, both those games have really memorable songs in them.
And we're on the original Game
Boy. And, I mean, Pokemon has the Lavender track, which I understand why people think people committed suicide when they listen to that.
So this is weird because I'm normally defending stuff, and Zach is normally, like, attacking stuff, but it's the other way around now. But
yeah, character growth.
I didn't get very far, so I can't attack very much in this game, or else I'd love to.
The music in the first area was actually pretty decent.
Yeah.
But
it felt nice and spacey, kind of lonely, kind of still had that alien vibe.
Eventually, you get to, like, ancient ruin-looking areas, but that's basically the only two areas I ever saw were cave or ancient ruins. And the ancient ruin music was, like, kind of this awkward ambient atonal noise.
So, I can't remember, since it's been a while since we played Super Metroid, do you heal when you save in Super Metroid?
Yes.
Okay. This game has the save points pretty similar to Super Metroid. They don't have their own rooms, but their platforms you sit on, you do not full heal. And that's really frustrating, because you get to it, you're like, salvation, I can't lose my progress. But then you're super low on health, and so it kind of has that same problem as Mega Man we were talking about earlier, where your next action is to go die so you have some health.
I never actually had more than one health tank, though, so...
Really? I got the second one, and then I don't remember where I found it. I must have, you know, probably done something you didn't. Or did you get an energy tank and then just never manage to fill it up?
I just never found a second one.
So. Okay, I did.
Although there are a number of, like, MO, this is the first one that has MO and health refill stations, but they're generally hidden.
I don't think I found any of those.
There's one in the first room where you kill a Metroid.
I definitely think every other game where they're just save points is much better. I guess Super Metroid has both save points and refill stations, huh?
Yep. But that's because refill stations aren't near the save points. And also the health refill stations are normally coupled with a missile refill station and the...
Yeah, I'm remembering that.
So.
So anyway, this game has that thing I hate where if you die, you just go to the title screen and you have to go through the agonizing loading of your save and realizing how far back you are. It's not that bad because it's a Game Boy game. It loads super fast. So you're not staring at this game over screen mashing A like, stop laughing at me, Dracula. I just want to play the game. But the save points, at least to me, seem super far apart. And
yeah. Well, really, for so exploring an area with the end goal of killing a boss was not nearly exciting or as engaging to me as hunting down individual Metroids. I actually missed one for like a half an hour because I thought I'd already been to that area.
Yeah, and again, a map that showed you where you would have been. I mean, really, this game is weird to me because it feels like a sequel to Metroid. It doesn't feel like a Game Boy port. It feels like they had new ideas. Metroid didn't have saves, for example. It had the cool password system that let you emulate them.
You started with weapons.
Yeah. But also, Metroid, you didn't really lose progress. If you died, you did go back to the last area you entered, but any upgrades or weapons you'd picked up, you kept. This game, you can lose a ton if you die by missing a save point or even just not going back soon enough.
And I don't really know whether they decided to change that. I guess they assumed that save points were sufficient compensation for that.
I think that is the idea.
Having played both Metroid and Super Metroid recently for the podcast, this really feels like some sort of weird, indeterminate state.
Yeah, it's clearly in the middle, because there are clearly good ideas they had that they tried to add to Metroid here that they just did so much better in Super Metroid.
The one thing that they didn't add, though, is a spider ball, and I really like the idea of it. It's just...
The spider ball is an upgrade to your morph ball. It lets you basically stick to walls so you can go up them. It is kind of cool, but the controls are really awkward on it, I find. It's hard to go the way you want, where you would think that would just be hit right, but...
That's actually, for a long time, I thought that there were certain, like, obstacles on a ceiling that you couldn't roll over.
Say to die.
I tried to go that way, and I was apparently hitting the wrong direction, so I just didn't go. I'm like, oh, guess I can't go over that specific type of tile. And turns out you totally can, and that was inhibiting my progress for about 15 minutes. So.
And also, I think this is the black and white, but like I said, it's really hard to tell if you've been in rooms before. So it's hard to tell, have I been on this ceiling before? Should I try going up there and seeing if there's something?
I will give it one thing. Despite being black and white, especially compared to Super Mario Land,
there's a surprising amount of detail in that game.
Yeah, it looks really good for a Game Boy game.
Yeah, it doesn't look worse than Metroid other than lacking color.
It actually just looks a little bit less detailed than Super Metroid, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I actually think the sprites look better in this than they did in the original Metroid. They're just not in color.
I agree. Also, this is the first game where the Varia suit gives you bigger shoulder pads.
To help differentiate it.
Yeah, because in Metroid, it was just a different color, and they couldn't do that, so they had to have a visual change.
And then in later Metroids, they did both.
But another change to this game from Metroid and Super Metroid, in both of those, you're trying to get to a location. You're trying to get the Mother Brain and kill her. In this one, you're trying to find all the Metroids and hunt them down. And you have a Metroid's remaining count, and that changes the dynamic quite a bit, because you're not trying to get us to a specific spot and kill a certain person. You're trying to go everywhere. And that makes the lack of map, I think, way more apparent than in Metroid 1.
And as I mentioned, that feels like a substantially less compelling task to me. I saw that I had killed like 10 or so Metroids so far. I'm like, I do not have the endurance to go find all 20 some odd other Metroids.
Yeah, it's something like 38, and that's, I think, too many.
39.
Okay.
Yep, it starts out at 39. And I agree, that's too many. Even if it's a really large map, I don't want to go do all that. I feel like if there's a tolerance at the end of, like, you don't have to have killed all of them.
Yeah, I feel like if it was just a side quest, if it was to get the better ending, you needed to kill all the Metroids, that would be sort of interesting.
See, that's how good sandbox games do it. Like, I was just talking about Assassin's Creed. You can do whatever you want. It's like, I don't want to do the main quest. I'm going to go do these assassin contracts, or I'm going to go roam around on buildings.
The Elder Scrolls games excel at that. Most people ignore the main quest entirely to go do side quests.
Yeah. I have all the achievements in Oblivion.
That's actually, I found someone
on the exact same thing
on Skyrim today, has put over 600 hours into the game and is still finding new quests that he hasn't done before in the game. Like, it's ridiculous.
Well, this is one of the first sandbox games, though. I don't even think people would call it a sandbox. I think looking at it, it's clearly a predecessor of them, an ancestor, if you will, because it's given you this big open map and just having you wander through it.
Somehow, though, I feel that this map is way more directed than the original Metroid map, because certain areas only open up after you've killed the Metroid. Like, it physically opens an area.
I feel like it just gives you less room to explore. Like, the first Metroid let you go to the wrong place, and you can see, oh, there's a closed door here. I guess I'm going to have to go somewhere else.
Psychologically, I don't know. I feel like there's a difference there for me. I react better to the first one.
So yeah, Metroids do change and get different as you go on, but there is basically the same fight 10 times and then the same fight 10 times and then the same fight 10 times and then a final boss. And I appreciate what they were doing, but I don't think it really worked out. It's really interesting to me. Like I said, Metroid, game I really liked. Super Metroid, game I really liked. Metroid 2, clearly a midpoint. Clearly taking ideas that they would refine in Super Metroid and discarding things from Metroid that didn't work. But it's just the worst of both worlds.
Sucks to be the middle child. Not that any of us would actually know that.
And then Nintendo doesn't make another Metroid. Right, I guess until Fusion. But that's at the same time that they give Retro or whoever made Metroid Prime interesting. Nintendo only made 3 Metroids before someone else made one.
Yeah.
That's not something I realized until just now.
I feel like Metroid is actually their least loved franchise, which is
Star Fox.
Okay, yeah. I can't argue with that. Poor Star Fox. Although, apparently, Ed says there was reputably a fairly good one on the GameCube.
Yeah, Assault?
Yeah.
The thing is, Assault is fine. It's not as good as Star Fox 64, or really as good as Star Fox, but it works. It's way better than Dino Crisis Planet Land Fox.
I wish that was his actual title. Star Dino Crisis Land Plan Fox.
The launch title for the GameCube?
Yes. That's like a bad Banjo-Kazooie.
It was actually another game, and then they just ported Star Fox into it, because they're like, that sells better than this unknown character.
Mm-hmm. And it's also a bad game. But
I've never played it. So,
like, unfortunately, Metroid 2. I kind of say skip it. I mean, if you are a Metroid fan, there might be something for you to like, but Metroid Fusion is on the Wii U Virtual Console, bro. Go play that.
Definitely Metroid Fusion is the epitome, I think. Or Metroid Prime. Metroid Prime is also really good.
And I know Metroid is on the 3DS. Super Metroid might be, too. So if you need mobile Metroid, you've got places to go first, too.
I feel like at the time, this would have been excellent.
Well, yeah, compared to the other games we've played for Mobile Month, I actually do like Mega Man a bit more, but this clearly has more going on.
But given the suite of other Metroid games, not to mention other games that are similar, like modern Castlevanias, there's no reason to play this game.
Modern Castlevanias? Like the 3D ones?
I think he means the 3DS ones.
Yeah,
the Castlevania reboot ones are not like that at all. And also,
that's what I was thinking about, like the new one.
The one
basically
where
they took God of War, pasted Dracula into it,
where Simon Belmont becomes Dracula.
What?
Yeah, that's the ending of the first Castlevania reboot game, is that Simon becomes Dracula, and then Richter shows up.
That's awesome.
No, it's not. It's terrible.
Oh.
Or like Monster Squad, the movie about Dracula commanding the universal monsters, in which Dracula's powers are throwing dynamite at people and Hadoukens. No, like
Seems
Dracula. He blows up the black sidekick cop by throwing dynamite at his police car and it explodes.
That's excellent.
Also, he calls a 4-year-old girl a bitch. She's a virgin who's chanting a spell to stop Dracula.
Oh, wow.
And he picks her up by the throat and says, "Stop, you bitch!"
You know, moment of passion.
Yeah.
It's
a surprisingly okay movie.
That is damning praise if ever I've heard it. It's surprisingly okay.
It's an 80s movie about a bunch of kids in a monster class who are hassled by Dracula, who found Van Helsing's journal at a garage sale. And so that is why Dracula is after them, because it has the spell to stop him in it.
Fair enough. Moral of the story, don't play Metroid 2. Play any of the other Metroids.
Okay.
Except Other Ram. Don't play Other Ram.
Nonsense. It's made by Team Ninja. They of the utmost quality and the top half of
you
people.
Know what I don't get? Is that the Dead or Alive series have a remarkably interesting stuff going on in the
Ninja
background.
Gaiden.
I have said it in the past. If they wrote like a book for the Dead or Alive franchise, I would freaking read it.
Games are like that, though, right? Street Fighter. All good ones. Mortal Kombat is the worst.
Yeah,
but
all good fighting games, if they just wrote a book that had their lore in it, I'd be all over that.
Chris Sims wrote a comic about Dudley and Balrog fighting.
That sounds amazing. Anyway, so since we seem to have exhausted the material for Metroid 2, which was surprisingly sparse given it's a Metroid game, what are we playing next week, Jeremy? The last game of Mobile Month!
The real capstone to Mobile Month should probably be Pokemon, because like that is the best the Game Boy ever got. That's not really available digitally. There are remakes of it, but they're really hard remakes. So we'll go to probably the second best game on the Game Boy and go with The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening.
Next time on Last Time, The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. Windfish!
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games, copyright 2014.
All the video games and other media mentioned herein are copyright of their respective owners.
Unfortunately, I don't own Square Enix. You can contact us at ltovg at lasttimeonvideogames.com, or Tyler at lasttimeonvideogames.com,
or Jeremy, G-E-R-E-M-Y, at lasttimeonvideogames.com,
and the best one, Zach, at lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Our primary source of interaction is lasttimeonvideogames.com, where you can find all sorts of written material in addition to the podcast.
If you want to follow us on Google+, plus.google.com/plus Last Time on Video Games.
If you're one of those weird people who uses Twitter, we are at LTOVG.
Quick, press X. Too late. You failed. Podcast is over.